tell you something I think you'll understand. When I say that something, I wanna hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand. And please say to me, you're gonna be my man, Ringo. Oh, please say to me, you're gonna hold my hand. Which is as risque as it got in 1964. It's such a feeling that my... Are you ready? I can't hide, I can't hide, I can't hide. Oh yeah, you got that something I think you'll understand. When I say that something, I wanna hold your hand. I was 10 years old. The Beatles saved my life. Right there in our living room that fateful winter night, as I watched in rapt attention this new and wondrous art, they performed their psychic surgery, linking my vocal cords and heart. Ringo was my favorite, though Paul was pretty cute. John was so beyond me, and George seemed so aloof. Well, they took my very being to its place of destiny. Then I started singing and set my spirit free. I love you, yeah, yeah, yeah. I love you, yeah, yeah, yeah. I love you, yeah, 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 yeah. Ever since that Sunday night on the Ed Sullivan Show, found a place to take my dreams, a path that I could follow. And while it isn't always easy, I wouldn't change a thing. Because it was the Beatles that taught my heart to sing. I love you, yeah, yeah, yeah. I love you. So with a name like Mary Megan Margaret McDonough and being the seventh of nine kids, it's not going to come as a big shocker that, yes, I was raised Catholic. Which I like to think explains my intense interest in Buddhism now and attraction to Jewish men. And I say the Beatles saved my life because, you know, I was starting to be recruited by the nuns, like,
as early as like the third grade, it felt like. You know, I was asked almost on a daily basis, who here wants to be a nun? And I was sure that if I didn't raise my hand, it would go on my permanent record. You know, so I raised my hand, and then they'd say, okay, Mary. And they always called me Mary because Megan wasn't a saint's name. And I'd say, not yet. Okay, Mary, now go apart a while and see if you have the calling. Oh my gosh, the calling. So I took this really seriously, you know, and I took a walk down the road from our house. I lived in a little town out in the country, you know. Not the end of the world, but you can see it from there, in the words of Lenny Bruce. And I sat on this stony hill, and it was kind of rainy and cold. And I thought, if I'm uncomfortable in the process, then that's definitely going to get me extra points, you know, because if I'm suffering, that's a really good thing. So, you know, I looked up at the sky. I don't know what I was expecting to see, you know, Surrender Dorothy, Sister Mary Mag, nothing. So I made my way homeward kind of crestfallen and a little afraid, you know, that I thought, oh, I think maybe I fibbed. I didn't lie, because a lie and a fib are a world of difference. I maybe fibbed, though, about being a nun. I think I just wanted to try on the costume. You know, the habit looked really cool to me, and as you can see, fashion is my thing. This dress seemed like a really good idea last week when I was packing. Today, I don't know. So I'm taking a chance here. You know, and so I just made my way home, and you know, I thought, oh, now I'm really going to the hot place, because, you know, I don't know. You know, who knows at 9 years old if you want to be a nun or not. But a friend of mine said, you know, she had an experience, the same experience, but at the time, she put toilet paper in her ears because she didn't want to hear the calling. She wanted to be a veterinarian. And so I thought, oh, that, you know, that Catholic education, man, makes great critical thinkers of all of us. So, you know, 2 years passed, and I made it out of the second grade, and I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I heard the calling loud and clear. I thought, oh, yes, must go there, must do that. And so I put my foot to the path. I begged my parents every day for guitar, 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 guitar. And I started writing songs with my friend Sid across the street, and she played baritone ukulele, and we had a folk duo, Meg and Sid. I top billing even then. And then, you know, 1965, July 15th, 1965, my father died suddenly of a cerebral hemorrhage. And it just rocked my world. And then 3 months later, my oldest sister, Kevin, who was a gifted actress and painter, on her way to study at the Royal Academy in London, was killed in a car accident. And so I just did a close-eyed swan dive into music, trying to make meaning out of grief. And I became sort of obsessed with playing guitar, and just like I would put tape on my fingers so I could keep playing, and I just started making up these songs, and it was the great healer for me, and it would continue to be the great healer for me. And my mother helped me quite a bit, and then a family friend submitted a tape of my original folk songs to the WLS in Chicago Big Break Radio Contest. And it was bands and other singers and this little folk singer from Crystal Lake, and I got in. I got in the contest. And I won! I won amplifiers and drums, mod orange-striped Ludwig's drums like Ringo's. I was not real popular with the other bands, but, you know, I was a folk singer, but I won. And so, and one of the prizes was a recording contract with Mercury Records. So I made my first record at 14, and I'm like, yeah, baby, this is it. It's always going to be this easy. And I'm always going to be feeling this good. So one thing led to another, and I started playing around town and getting great reviews. And then I had an opportunity to, I made 2 45s. And they sounded like Megan McDonough meets the Tonight Show Band. They weren't my songs. They weren't folk songs. They were this, you know, horns and the whole deal. And I think they were looking for the next Leslie Gore, and I was not her. But they released me instead of the record. And I just, you know, kind of kept on plugging away. And I would go down to the office of the producer of that record and play him my original songs. And one day he called me up. I was 16, and he said, you know, we're moving the production company to California. Maybe you can, you know, move out there, and we'll get your record deal. And I'm like, well, I got to ask my mom. I can go. You know, now I'm sure had she not been drinking, I probably wouldn't have been able to go. But, you know, there's something... there are harder things to navigate than an alcoholic parent. Fewer things that are as hard as navigating an alcoholic parent. But, boy, you know what? Once you have a child, have you noticed that you can really let your parents off the hook for a lot of stuff? And I've had a lot of therapy, a lot of Al-Anon, a lot of 12-step recovery, you know, under my belt. So we're good. She was like, yeah. Go. If it doesn't work out, you know, you can always come home. So I finished my junior year of high school, and I went to California thinking, yeah, it's always going to be this easy. It's always going to, you know, it's always going to be great. And I got a record deal. And I made an LP. Do you remember those? They were the size of, you know, dinner plates. And I went on a little tour, and I was in Denver, Colorado, with my sister Brenna, who is my road manager. And I was 19, and a friend of ours took us to Red Rocks Park. And during the day, you can stand on the lip of the stage. The stage is closed, but you can stand on the lip of the stage and look out at the audience, at the seat. So I stood up there, and all of a sudden this... I launched a rocket of desire in that I was like, I would love to play here one day. Just like sprang out of my heart. And so a year and a half later, I opened for John Denver at Red Rocks Park. I know, right? It was incredible. So, yeah, manifestation number one. I'm like, yeah, baby. Here we go. And I didn't even know what I was doing. You know, it went okay, except for, you know, a certain guitar player had a thing for young girls. And that's a story for when I come back next time. I'll tell you that one. So, I toured for about a year and a half, played Carnegie Hall and the Greek Theater and Red Rocks Park. I mean, it was amazing. And then it was time to, you know, kind of have a first bottom. And so I lost the tour for several reasons. And opening acts are probably the most expendable, you know, when trouble ensues. And so I found myself back, you know, leaving California, leaving Los Angeles, in my Toyota Land Cruiser. and granola in my hair, and going back to Crystal Lake to kind of help my mom, who would call me late at night, you know, after she'd been drinking, saying, you know, when will you be famous, and you're my last hope, and they're going to take the house, and I can't, you know, kind of heavy stuff for a young kid. But I went home, and she ended up, you know, she had gotten sober the first time when I was 5 and then had a relapse when I was around 14. And then and we're just really grateful that she came back and got our life together. But that entailed selling the house and, you know, saying goodbye, and so lots of loss. So I'm getting pretty tough, and I'm thinking, yeah, this seemed like a really good idea, and sleeping, and, you know, there's a point in life for the Irish, you know, we either drink or we do not drink. And when we drink, it's a very self-medicating until it doesn't work anymore. And that's a very, that's not a pretty time. So I went through that, and I slept for a summer and licked my wounds. And then I put a band together. But all along the way, getting really tough. And I find myself, fast forward many years later, I'm in my late 20s. I've been through a starter marriage to a great guy, and I moved to, you know, I'm taking what we call a geographical cure, and I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to go to New York, and that's a really good idea. Maybe not, but I'll tell you what, New York is a great city to bottom out in, because you can do it fast, baby. They do everything fast in New York. You're going to hit a bottom fast, you know. So there was such divine order in all of it. But while I was there, I'm channel surfing, and I've got a producer, manager, my co-writer, I'm doing sessions for him, and he's also my boyfriend, because I like to bundle. And my bundle boyfriend has a contact at NBC, and I say, you know, I want to go on this show, Star Search. Yeah, Star Search. I could probably win on Star Search. So he gets me an audition, and I pass that audition, and he gets me another audition. I think, yeah, baby, it's going to be this easy again. So I get to California, and I get on the set, and I meet, does anyone here know who T. Renee Crutcher is? Yeah, T. Renee Crutcher. She beat me on Star Search twice. Oh, painful. But there's that bottom that I had to hit, and it had to be quick and dramatic so I wouldn't miss it, because the universe will turn up the volume. And it was pretty darn loud by the time I got to the set of Star Search. So and they say, bring two dresses, because when you win, and they say, you're going to win, because she's already won 7 times. She's going to the final. You're in. This is great. So I'm like, yeah. And my bundle boyfriend thinks it's a good idea if I'm not introduced as Mary Megan Margaret McDonough from Crystal Lake, Illinois. Let's give her a big hand. But Megan from New York. Wonk, wonk. Not a good idea. But I'm like, oh, whatever. And so I do my song, and then T. Renee Crutcher does her song, and I sing a ballad that's so great, and a song that I thought needed to be in the world called Wake Up and Dream. And she sang, come in from the rain. And the clap-o-meter is crazy. And, you know, and so we come out, and Ed McMahon says, T. Renee Crutcher, 4 stars. Now, 4 stars is as many as you can get. And I think, and in your mind, you know, you're not in your body, but you're in your mind. Oh, maybe we're going to tie. Yeah, that's it. We'll tie. Megan from New York, 3.5 stars. Now, at this moment, you think, don't cry and don't throw up. Just turn, congratulate her, and hit the bricks. So I get off the set, and I'm just about to let myself have my moment when I feel someone tap my shoulder. Megan, could you come back? The camera ran out of film, and we have to refilm the end. Let there be no mistake. This is not for you. You might think it's for you, and your ego thinks it's for you, but it was not. I would love to play here one day. It was, yeah, I got to go on Star Search, win, yeah. No, this is not for you. You guys, I am filled to the brim with shame. And I go out and I, you know, I do the self-medicating, and I'm just filled with resentment and shame and regret. I go back to New York. I feel horrible, and I think, I got to go back to Chicago. Well, I go back to Chicago, and don't you know, my friend who I'm staying with is in AA. And I think, oh, I go to Al-Anon every now and then, like 5 years ago, but I stopped going because I got it. Yeah, I know. No, I'm good. Yeah. My bundle boyfriend, yeah, I can fix him too. And there was a Catholic church down the street from my house. And a couple things major happened in 1 week. I went to an open AA meeting, and I heard something that's read before every meeting called How It Works. And it goes, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I started crying. Now, anytime I start crying, the jig's up. There's no pay attention here. This is for you. This is for you. So I sat in the meeting, and then after the meeting, a guy with great blue eyes came up to me and said, you know, will you be coming back? And my only thought was, will you be here? Listen, God meets us where we are. I'm telling you, God meets us where we are. And, of course, we dated, and we were talking about getting engaged. And then he made amends to his girlfriend a few weeks later and married her. It's another story for next time when I come back. It's a dandy. I've got a couple dandies. But what else happened was I was going to give Mass one more try because I thought, I just got to go back to Mass. That's probably why my life is a train wreck, you know. And I had gone in New York, and it was about divorced Catholics and how they're going to the hot place. And I thought, yeah, is that really? Is that? So I thought, well, I'll go once more. Same thing. I kind of slink in. I'm ashamed. I haven't been here in a while. I'm sorry. Guilt, mea culpa. Sermon, divorced Catholics and how they're going to hell. I thought, really, you guys got to get a new song. You know, it's 1985. Let's go. And I went back when the church was empty, and I went to the Mary Chapel. Now, you guys, Mary and I have always been really tight. Love Mary. She's my girl. And I sat down and I said, look, I've got a big problem. I love you, and I love your kid. I love Jesus. He's really. But I can't come here because every time I do, I feel so bad. But I found 12 steps, and I found this place, Unity. And everybody is welcome, and they love you. And they're happy, and they're real open-minded, and they talk about reincarnation, for Pete's sake. I went to confession when I was in New York, and you guys, I have to tell you very briefly, because I thought, if I just go to confession, you know, and go back to, you know, and I went to confession, and I had an Indian priest, an East Indian priest, who said, and I told him, I said, well, you know, I'm really interested in reincarnation. Oh, this is very bad. Oh, you cannot think these things. They are against the church. And I thought, uh-oh. You know, and I would hear Eric Butterworth speak at Avery Fisher Hall. I mean, so I was trying to leave gracefully, but it wasn't until Mary said this, and I quote, and this voice was not my own when I told her, I love you and I love your son, but I can't come here because I feel so bad when I do. I heard the words, go and be where you can give and receive the most love. To this day, it just fills me with fizzies in my bloodstream. I'm like, oh my gosh. From that moment on, it was okay. It was okay to go to Unity. It was okay to become a music director at Unity. Oh my gosh, now I'm really in. It was okay to start writing New Thought songs about joy in the journey and talk to God and hang up the phone and talk to God, which is really called, it's called talk to God, but to me it's note to self. Just be quiet and go to prayer. Unity was built on it. I called Silent Unity. Silent Unity is one of the reasons I got sober. I know those people were praying for me in the depths of that gripping anxiety and the sleeplessness and the insomnia. And I know they meant well, but when people said, well, nobody ever died of insomnia, I wanted to say, yet, I might be the first, you know? But one of the first books I got here at Unity and started reading, I went to my first Unity service at a church in my hometown, Crystal Lake, in 1979. When I found Al-Anon, I went to Unity Church. And you guys, it was in the same building that was formerly the theater that my sister was on her way to the night she was killed in an accident. These things are not lost on me simply because of these teachings, that it is all real, that it all means something, that it's all bring up the trauma, make it speakable, talk about it. Don't push it down one more day and say, it's okay, God giveth and God taketh away. I know the nuns meant well when they told me that, but you don't tell an 11-year-old child who needs to hear, this is really sad. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to grieve. Don't push grief back one more day. Cry, gnash your teeth, get it out, pound pillows. I'm a prime example of, you know, the Irish are the great stuffed potatoes of the world. We will just put it in what I affectionately refer to as the FU file. You know, I won't tell you that I'm angry. I'll just put it in the file. But when that puppy blows, it's not pretty, you know. And you got to drink an awful lot to keep that sealed up, that file. It can be deleted, but not before it's opened and let out, let that stuff out. Whoever you are, this is from Emmett Fox's book, Power Through Constructive Thinking, one that really changed my life, and in his chapter on Your Heart's Desire. Whoever you are, God has not made you without a definite purpose in view. The universe is a universe. That is, it is united harmony, a divine scheme. There can therefore be no such thing as a misfit or an unwanted or unneeded piece. It could not happen that God could create a spiritual entity such as you are without having a special purpose in view. And this means that there is a special and particular place in it for you and only you. God never repeats itself, or so it has never made two people alike, and it is for this reason that no two people could ever do quite the same work or express themselves in quite the same way. That is why, rightly understood, there really need be no competition. There need be no such thing as, say, 2,000 people struggling for the same place in life. What the place may be, there can be only one person who can fill it perfectly. And there are 1,999 other places somewhere waiting for the other people, if only they will find them. And that one, already in your past life, from time to time, God himself has whispered into your heart that just the very wonderful thing, whatever it is, that he is wishing you to be and to do and to have. And that is the wonderful thing, and that wonderful thing is nothing less than what is called your heart's desire. Nothing less than that. The most secret, sacred wish that lies deep down at the bottom of your heart. The wonderful thing that you hardly dare look at or to think about. The thing that you would rather die than have anyone else know of, because it seems too far beyond anything that you are or have at this present time. That you fear that you would be cruelly ridiculed if the mere thought of it were known. That is the just the very thing that God is wishing you to do and to be for him, it. Only you can fill that special spot that you're here to do. You don't think that I got a little heat for wherever I went, my guitar went. And, you know, I had siblings who were like, oh, we're going to play. I didn't care. I had the voice that said, keep going. Wherever that voice is for you, let it come up again. It's okay. So this last song is just for you. And if you know it, please sing along. And thank you, thank you, thank you. You will do amazing things with the choice each new day brings. And with every breath you take, bless the progress that you make. The reason you live is found in every gift you give. Love your life, love your dreams. You will do amazing things. Amazing, amazing. You will do amazing things. Amazing, amazing. You will do amazing things. Oh, the places you will go, and the people you will know. Don't worry when or where or how. You don't have to know right now. You're on the right track. No need to look ahead or back. Just enjoy what this day brings. You will do amazing things. Amazing, you will do amazing things. Amazing, amazing, you will do amazing things. You don't have to work it out, just stay in the here and now. Let your mind rest for a little while. Sometimes deepest answers come when you're out there having fun. So close your eyes and take a breath and smile. Amazing, amazing, you will do amazing, you're here.
do amazing things. Amazing.
You're amazing. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Heather. Thank you. And thank you, Reverend Crystal.